Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Growing up in this family, there's pretty much two requirements. You better eat fast, you're not going to eat. And be ready every morning to just wake up and pretty much have a fist fight. Whether it's an actual fist fight or it's just an emotional fist fight, you're going to have one way or the other, pretty much every day.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I am very excited to hear from this man on the phone right now, because it's been a good minute since we've gotten to chat with Matt Verderam of FanSided. You can follow him on Twitter, at Matt Verderam. You can read his work, the Stack in the Box podcast, and call him on FanSided as well. Also, I just found this out when I went to his Twitter a second ago, because Matt, I'm not sure if you know, but I wasn't extremely online at the time that you posted this. There's also the Stack in the Box YouTube channel that you're doing with Mark Carmen and Benny Heisler, and apparently Joe Montana was on episode one, so that's a pretty good kickoff. Congrats on the YouTube channel. It's very good to talk to you again, Matt.
Thank you. Before I start making fun of you, it's nice that you're back. I'm glad you're okay. I was concerned about you. It's good to talk to you again. Now, I have to ask you, what is more painful and hard on your body? Almost dying or the Chiefs defense?
I will say that this is a little bit of a tangent, but that the Thursday morning I was in the hospital, I woke up from my whole deal, and I didn't even realize what day it was, so I didn't even think that I had a TV, a little TV in the ICU that I could have put on Thursday Night Football, but I was simply too out of it, and so I missed Panthers Texans. And I feel
like that's a tragedy.
See, that's the thing, is like I was not in a good place mentally or physically, but at least I didn't have to watch that. I got home from the hospital that Saturday night and then was greeted on Sunday by Chiefs Chargers, you know? And I'm not going to say that I wish I hadn't seen it at all, cuz I feel like that's tempting fate. But I will say that it hasn't made me feel any better.
Well, you know, if it makes you feel any better, I don't think that Chiefs have figured out what day it is whenever they play defensively. They may think it's like a Friday. They didn't have to play. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, somebody's like, hey, guys, shooting up in 20. Oh, my God, we're playing tonight? Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much been the level of the defense so far, 5 weeks. So you may not be the only one in the Kansas City metro area who doesn't know what day it is, what time it is, what's required of you. It's been interesting.
As somebody who did not realize it was Wednesday until about 3 or 4 p.m. today, I thought it was Thursday for pretty much the entire day. I understand this.
Wow, I appreciate that. I also, Rudy reminded me, I didn't tell this part of the story in terms of getting back from the hospital. So I got back again Saturday night, and then Sunday I, you know, slept in a little bit and had some general complications, just sort of figuring out all of my, you know, first day at home, stabbing needles into my belly, etc. And I had not taken a shower in a full week. That's where I was at. And so I smelled amazing. And so
it probably happens more than just when you're in the hospital.
I am more than happy to be the butt of every possible joke, but I want to be clear for the record. I am a daily showerer. That is a major part of who I am as a person, to the point that it might be some sort of indication of a larger OCD or something. I'm not sure. However, as Patrick Mahomes turned the ball over twice in that first quarter, I was in the best mood I could have possibly been in watching him turn the ball over, because I was washing off a week of filth in the shower, watching it through the curtain on my phone and listening on my little shower speaker. So watching them that way was fine, because I was just thrilled to be getting clean and being home. There was no circumstance I could have been in during the Bills game to take the edge off of that. So I've really been on all sides of that spectrum.
I understand. I hear your pain. I'm glad you've bathed since you've been home. That's good for you, your girlfriend, everyone involved. I'm glad.
It was the last. I haven't showered since. You're right, but other than that, it's still
starting now.
Right, exactly.
I'm glad you're doing well, and back to torture people on the radio. So good.
I would also like to share briefly that I believe that you texted me somewhere along the time that I was, I think, either completely unconscious or borderline unconscious. Maybe borderline unconscious? I don't know. That you were concerned that it was, in fact, some sort of Arby's unholy pile of meats that had put me in the hospital. I would also like to take this moment to publicly deny that had any part in my hospitalization. I just would like to be clear. So if at any point Arby's does want to sponsor this show, we don't have that hanging over our heads.
I was going to text you something really heartfelt, and then I was like, well, that's not who I am. So then I thought about it, and I was like, well, when he does come to, he's got to laugh.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
I mean, he's had such a horrible couple of days. Like, I was giving something to laugh about. So for anyone who listens to the show consistently, they know, they understand.
That and for me, that was going back and seeing some of, like, Seth is, I think, has actively gone back to see if he can just delete some of his heartfelt tweets because, it's simply too genuine, too sincere. And whenever, he shifted to making fun of my only partially functioning pancreas, that's how I knew we were back. You know, whenever we can make jokes about it again, we're in the clear. And so it was nice to have, the brief thought of Arby's wash over me. Also, my real thing now that I got to keep a real eye on is carbs. But if I, don't have the curly fries, I can eat all the Arby's meat and cheese that I want. I got to just factor in that bun. I might become like an Arby's, rewards member or something out of this. Maybe this is my new health kick.
Yeah, that'll keep you out of the hospital.
It'll at least put me back in there with something different, which would be nice. Have some variety.
Spice of life.
Yeah, exactly.
You can be what Subway had with Jared, Arby's can have with you.
Well, I would...
Maybe not the whole picture.
Yeah, I would say, Rudy, that I would prefer we go with, like Tom Brady is doing stuff with Subway now.
Never heard of him.
Steph Curry is doing stuff with Subway now. I'll even be Barkley.
Baseball?
I'll be Charles Barkley for Subway if that's what it takes. I'll be a spokesperson for any other company. Or just would be compared to anyone else.
You don't ever want to have a situation where somebody goes, you remind me of Jared at Subway.
Yeah, I'd be like, Rudy, you're such a good producer of content. You know who you remind me of? Harvey Weinstein. That's not acceptable, Rudy. That's not acceptable.
Not good.
Rudy's kept his microphone off because he's a coward.
I'm sorry.
He put that dead fish into a cannon, blasted it into the show, and then left a Rudy-shaped hole in the wall.
I've been trying to do math, which is not great when I'm laughing. I had to start over because I don't think the out time for the hour is correct.
Nobody could be a bigger coward today than Mark Davis.
Oh, okay. There's the segment.
Easily the biggest coward in my world anyway today.
I was going to ask who had a worse week, me in the hospital or John Gruden, but the answer is me because I didn't know that my pancreas wasn't working. John Gruden knew he was the bleep hole. He just didn't tell anybody about it.
I will tell you, for Stacking the Box on Monday, the column, I'm going to do a little bit on Gruden and it's gone on. And it's hard because the news that he was resigning, quote-unquote, broke on Monday. So I feel like by the time the next column comes out, it's a week old, and it's kind of like, well, you're not going to lead the column with it. But in any event, I have texted, I want to say five sources. It's at least been four. And I've asked each one of them, hey, does what happened with Gruden, does it surprise you? And every one of them immediately was like, no.
Yeah.
Not doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
So, look, he got what was coming. Frankly, he should have been at minimum suspended, if not fired, before they even had the Bears-Raiders game on Sunday.
Yeah.
He inexplicably was just coaching like nothing happened. Everybody was fine. It was no big deal. And then, apparently it was like not that bad that he was just a racist.
Right.
But then once he was also like unbelievably homophobic and a slew of other things, then it was like, yeah, he probably ought to go.
Yeah.
So he at minimum should not have been coaching that game on Sunday. But as we've seen, the Raiders just couldn't be bothered to do anything about it. And then Monday were essentially forced into a position where they had no choice. And then Davis tells Mark Gutierrez over at ESPN, who covers the Raiders, he says, you know, hey, I'm not going to talk about this. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but I'll let the assistant coach talk about it, who's now the interim coach. And, oh, by the way, blame the NFL. Like, nice job, Mark.
Yeah.
Way to be out in front and get out there and do your job. You only own the organization.
The one thing about that that is, from the very first thing that you mentioned there about the people you texted and no one being surprised, also, I will make this quick on this front. You know, Brandon Staley talked about it and was excellent.
Yep.
And Andy Reid, whenever he opened his presser today, basically said, I'm aware of it all and I'm not going to talk about it. And that was a little bit that didn't hit me very well sitting in there today. And he basically said, don't ask me about it, 'cause I'm not going to talk about it. And then nobody asked about it. I didn't ask about it. You know, that's on all of us, I guess. That's on me, whatever. I wasn't going to follow up on the thing he explicitly said he wasn't going to talk any about. But to kind of take that route from a guy that he worked with and knows and has talked very highly of in the past. And the idea that, like, John Gruden is one thing publicly and a different thing to all of his friends or whatever, that people he feels comfortable saying stuff like that around, that makes sense. That's typically how people who are racist or homophobic or misogynistic or super pro-concussion or what all the things that Gruden were, that's typically how that works. The idea that he was only all of those things in, like, one email thread and that no one else who ever worked with John Gruden ever saw that side of him is so completely unbelievable to me that I kind of hoped that Andy Reid would say something, even, you know, again, like that Staley ended up, I thought, saying very well.
Yeah, look, you know, I think Reid should have said something.
Yeah.
And he's not compelled to. He doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the right thing to do.
It would have been nice. Yep.
I mean, if nothing else, just come out and say, look, what he said was awful.
Yep.
I mean, how hard is that? I don't understand. You know, look, Reid has been in Kansas City for a long time. Everybody knows this point that Andy doesn't like to stir the pot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what he does. He's very allergic to that. Which, okay, fine. A lot of NFL coaches, a lot of coaches in general are allergic to that. But come on. I mean, this is not a touchy issue. This is an obvious thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is who's, like, and God knows, unfortunately, there are plenty. Who's siding with John Gruden on this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what a scumbag you have to be to come down on the side of John Gruden? Like, you know what? I don't think it was that bad what he said. And look, and by the way, for the record, I understand the people in other situations who will say, well, you know, that tweet or that text or that phone call or that email was a decade ago and that person's different.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that when the person was 16 when they tweeted it.
Yep.
When that person was 18 years old or a college kid, you know what, they didn't, not that they didn't know any better, but they're immature and they're dumb like everybody is and they're 17, 18, 19. That doesn't excuse it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll hear the argument that you've changed, you've matured, you've grown up. I'm certainly not the person I was when I was 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll hear that. John Gruden was a grown man when he sent those emails. So John Gruden was what when he sent those? 45?
Yeah, I think 48 stuck out somewhere. Yes, he was in his
mid-late 40s. You know, I don't want to hear that you didn't know, and not that he said that, but I don't want to hear people arguing that on his behalf. Well, you know, it's 10 years, who cares? I mean, it's still, and by the way, what he said was heinous. It wasn't like he said something that was kind of innocuous, like taken out of context. I mean, what he said is what he said. He deserves to be fired. And yeah, it would have been good if Andy Reid, not that he had to, but I think he should have, just said, hey, you know what, even if he says, hey, look, I'm friends with John, but I can't back him on that, what he said. You know, he deserved it and ended up getting fired.
Yeah. I agree with 100% of that, and especially with Reid. It was sort of, I was a little bit disappointed at the time. I think it was amplified by seeing how Staley took that opportunity and turned it into something that was actively positive as opposed to just not negative. The other thing with the point you mentioned there, and we haven't talked about it here tonight yet because this show's been very self-involved, which is just a huge change of how our usual shows go. And I want to talk about it more later as well. But the one other thing in terms of, like, hey, if you're going to take stuff from 10 years ago, and again, whenever you were just a young, innocent, you know, 45-year-old man who didn't know any better, but particularly take what Gruden actually said. I have resigned as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, period. I love the Raiders and do not want to be a distraction, period. Thank you to all the players, coaches, staff, and fans of Raider Nation, period. I'm sorry, I never meant to hurt anyone. End of statement. And that might as well have been, I don't know what I'm going to put on this headset again. I'd like to apologize to my bosses at Fox. There's a deep drive into left field by Castellanos. Because he doesn't apologize to anyone who deserves an apology there, and there is nothing of, as you mentioned, if you said, hey, here's something that you said when you were 15, because you're on Facebook at age 15. Here's what you said. It would be really, really easy for any decent person whose heart and opinions and development as a person was actually different to say, I was young, and let me explain to you exactly why I don't think that way anymore, why I know I was wrong, and what I will do to make people around me feel differently about that. There's room for that in the world, I think most people would understand that. Gruden said, I'm sorry to be a distraction. And I never meant to hurt anyone, which is a very weird thing to say because, it's basically a non sequitur there, which is just bonkers.
It was a ridiculously dumb, short-sighted statement. But, you know, look, I think the end result is for me, he got what he deserved. It maybe didn't come down the way it should have in the sense that I think Mark Davis should have just been, frankly, more of an adult.
Yeah.
And stepped in and not let him coach a game on Sunday. But look, you know what? You know, really, in all honesty, the Raiders always get this viewpoint, I think, nationally, it's like this rogue outfit because Al Davis was a swashbuckling figure. And
right.
Al Davis was one of the most forward-thinking owners in the history of the NFL.
Hmm.
I mean, you go back and look. He was the first owner that the team drafted a black quarterback in the first round, Eldridge Dickey. He hired Art Shell, of course, a great Hall of Fame left tackle, who was the first black head coach in the NFL. Amy Trask, who's a phenomenal follower on Twitter, one of the smartest people you'll ever have the pleasure of speaking with, if you do. She was an executive for the Raiders at the time. There were no women in the NFL, period, let alone the front office. I would think that if Al Davis was alive and those emails came out, John Gruden wouldn't have his job by the weekend.
Hmm.
Like, Al Davis gets this reputation as being a kind of a lunatic because he was so different. He was a maverick also. But he was really forward-thinking. And I think he'd be pretty embarrassed by the way his son has acted.
Hmm.
I'll tell you right now, if Al Davis is still alive, he wouldn't have the interim coach doing the press conference.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I think that's the gist of all of that that I wanted to talk to you about. I think we've got a pretty good bow put on that. There was something else. There's one other element of it that I thought was kind of interesting. There was the report that the NFL would like to get rid of Mark Davis. It seems like there's a variety of steps that could come from all of this. I guess last thing with kind of all of the emails that we've seen so far, are we going to get more public? Because it started as an investigation of the Washington Football Team. And now we've got, you know, Adam Schefter being a dork and John Gruden being a bigot. But what else is going to come from all of this?
Well, it's hard to say. Like, the NFL is going to do everything in its power to bury anything that implicates any kind of an owner in the league because the owners run the league. Goodell works for the owners.
Mm.
So it's not as though Goodell is going to go on some kind of like a hunt for Dan Snyder. It's not going to happen. Dan Snyder is an awful owner. And by all accounts, a pretty lousy human being. But I don't think he's going anywhere unless these things get unearthed from another source. Now, look, if you're a reporter and you're digging into that, that's like your white whale to try to get some stuff out of it. I think, you know, and that's the one problem they've got with that team is based in Washington, D.C. Well, there's a lot of good journalists, scout that's based in Washington, D.C. There are going to be people sniffing around that thing, doing whatever it takes, trying to get a story out of it. But it's hard to say. I do think, though, this has become a big enough story. Like, and everybody today is focused on this stuff with Schefter. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know every detail of it. I don't know. You know, he says it's a story about – it was about the lockout. He was trying to nail down detail. It's a weird thing to call somebody Mr. Editor.
It's really weird. It's just got such a weird vibe.
It does. I don't know. Look, I'm not naive, okay? I have sources around the league, nowhere near Adam Schefter's level. I'm not going to pretend that. But, you know, there's certainly you know, are times in your career when, you know, you try to trade a favor or something, you know, because, hey, you know, a little access here, you know, trade a favor, you know, whatever, do a profile. That stuff happens. And whether or not people want to think it, it does. I mean, that's the price of doing business at the level of the NFL. And I think now, where Schefter goes way over the line is if he's got a story going to Bruce Allen and Allen's basically got carte blanche to edit his story, that's complete journalistic malpractice.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who's ever done that. Mm. If I did that at FanSided, I would be fired immediately. Mm. So, I mean, did he do that? I don't know. I mean, it might have been something and say, check to make sure these quotes are accurate. That's fine. I mean, that's, you know, you want to make sure the quote's right. But everyone's so focused on Schefter. Well, like, don't worry about Schefter. Worry about the 650,000 emails.
Right.
Like Schefter, who cares? Fuck, I have a lot of respect for Adam Schefter, but let's be honest. Like, he's there. He's an agent to break contracts, be on TV.
Right.
He's not, you know, he's not Walter Cronkite, okay? And he was a hell of a writer and a reporter when he was at the Denver Post. Mm-hmm. And it certainly has the chops to do it. But, like, I'm not worried about the state of journalism based off of, like, what Adam Schefter's talking about with Bruce Allen. I'm more concerned about what's in these other emails that we haven't seen. That's what I think people should be focused on, not on whether or not Adam Schefter's being edited by Bruce Allen.
Yep, I'm good with all of that. Do you want to talk about the Chiefs here a little bit?
Oh, do we have to?
Yeah, contractually, we have to give 5 full minutes of Chiefs content here. You made the point on Twitter that the AFC is not particularly deep with, like, obvious playoff teams, and then you can make the argument that they've played the 4 best teams in the AFC. I'm not that high on the Titans or whatever, and they'll play the Titans in a couple of weeks, so we'll get there. But right now, 30,000-foot view, not just of the Bills game or anything, but kind of even where this season goes from here, can you kind of give me your perspective on where the Chiefs sit in the conference right now, vis-a-vis making the playoffs?
They'll make the playoffs. As long as they're healthy, they'll make the playoffs. Because, look, even if you want to be pessimistic and you want to say, okay, the Bills are better than them, fine. They are at the moment. The Browns and the Ravens in the North, okay. The Titans, I mean, somebody's got to win that division. You think it'd be the Titans in the South, okay, fine. The Chargers right now, they're ahead of them. They've beaten them. That's fine. Well, that leaves 2 playoff teams. Go ahead and find me 2 teams there in Kansas City, the AFC. I mean, who is it? The Raiders? The Broncos? No, that's not happening. Is it Indianapolis at 1-4? Is it Miami at 1-4? Is it Pittsburgh? Like, Cincinnati ended up 3-2, but come on now. Like, none of those teams are better than Kansas City. So, unless they get a crush of injuries, they're going to make the playoffs. The concern right now for the Chiefs is can they win the division? I mean, they're 2 back of the Chargers. They already lost them at home. Now, they will see them again. They'll see them in a short week 15 at L.A., although I would imagine that'll basically be Arrowhead West, as it typically is. But right now, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm not worried about any of that crap. I'm worried about getting better. I'm worried about, okay, look, defensively, can we get 5% better on Sunday? Can we get 5% better? Can we stop blowing assignments and can we stop missing tackles? And then offensively, can we stop turning the ball over? I mean, I'm not that worried about the offense. The defense is. This is the first time I can honestly ever remember watching a talented team and thinking they don't do one thing well defensively.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yep. I mean, normally you at least say, hey, look, they can't stop the run, but they get a good pass rush,
yep,
and vice versa, or hey, they're good to cut. I mean, there's literally not one thing about them defensively that's any good.
100% agree. I think I might have said that after the Eagles game. There is simply nothing that they can hang their hat on. Even if it's like Spags will just blitz the bleep out of you and you can try to figure it out if Dan Sorensen's in your backfield. Like there's no identity whatsoever.
And well, that's terrible.
The other thing about it that's confusing to me that I'm most interested if you think you have any sort of answer to this is all of the what appears to be miscommunication or at least blown assignments, stuff where you have 2 linebackers turning their back to a wide open running back, where you have, I mean, coverage all over the field. There was that screen cap from the Eagles game, and this is with the ball still in Jalen Hurts' hands. Not one of the things where he's throwing the ball and then you take a screenshot. But you have literally 3 pass catchers at 3 different depths on the field wide open, like high school windows open. And That part of it is confusing to me because that's not a continual part of like a Spags defense over these his time in Kansas City, at least. It's not like they were super undisciplined throughout the last couple of years. So what do you attribute that most to? Does it look like Spags is doing something different? Is the athleticism of some of the older guys just completely falling off? But even then, like, has Anthony Hitchens gotten lost? Why does he look lost?
You know, they're all fair questions, and they're good ones. And I wish I had an answer. My best answer is I think that Hitchens and Sorensen in particular have just gone off a cliff.
Yeah,
I do not think either one of them can play anymore. And I have no problem with Spagnuolo's schemes. I would like to see them be more aggressive. Mm-hmm. But I don't have like people who want him fired. I just can't stop. Like the guy is, if he got fired, he'd have a job next week. Okay, but there are legitimate criticisms of Spags. One of which right now to me, and I don't want to just continue to pick on this guy because he's just been hearing it. But Dan Sorensen should not be playing 100% of snaps.
It's insane. Yeah.
It's got to stop. I don't care what they do. I don't care if it's Thornhill. I don't care if it's Watts. I don't care if they go Sorensen be up the street. I don't care what they do. You can't continue down this road. It's just insane. The other thing is, at some point, if you're going to have seven sacks, which is fewest in the league, and Frank Clark looks basically like a parked car at this point, like you need to bring pressure,
yeah,
and just deal with whatever the consequences are. If you can't look, and I don't know, you know, Frank Clark's been dealing with hamstring injuries and whatnot, and maybe that's part of it. That game against Buffalo, I mean, is he even on the field other than the roughing the passer penalty?
It's the only thing I remember.
Jerron Reed, my God, I literally have not seen Jerron Reed in 5 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where he is. Is he alive? Yeah. Has anyone seen him? Did they send him home? Like, wait,
I think he got out-snapped by Wharton against the Bills, which was
brutal.
Yeah, insane.
I remember talking to personnel evaluators this offseason, and without bringing it up, just, hey, who are three of your favorite signings under the radar? He came up all the time.
Yeah.
Like, people were like that. And that's
Andy Reid brought it up, like, without any, like, in questions about Chris Jones. He'd be like, well, we brought in Jerron Reed, and he can move Jones out to the edge. It's like, all right, sick.
Listen, there were multiple teams around the league that were shocked that he got cut. They all thought, every team I talked to on this, at least two or three teams said, hey, look, you know, he's going to get traded. And he got cut and actually chose Kansas City over Buffalo, according to a source. Like, he actually almost went to the Bills and ended up going to the Chiefs. But my main takeaway with them is right now defensively, look, they have no speed. Gay coming back helps. If you want a silver lining as a Chiefs fan right now, the second half of that game against Buffalo, as much of a lost cause as that game ended up being, the defense only gave up 7 points. They actually played very well outside of one drive. Now, one drive is extended by a penalty that we'll just move on from. Mm-hmm. But I thought the biggest difference in that second half was Gay was on the field, and they just finally said, you know what the hell is it, we're blitzing. We're just coming after guys. And you know what? It changes the look. Like this week against Washington, Terry McLaurin's a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
They have nobody else. Nobody. I mean, Gibson's fine as a running back. He's averaging 4 yards a carry. Like, they have no quarterback. They have no tight end. The backs don't catch the ball. They have no receiver other than McLaurin who has 170 yards. And for a point of reference, Mecole Hardman has 199. Okay? They have nobody. If there is ever a game to just double a guy and blitz the hell out of the quarterback, this game's it. If Kansas City can't stop this offense, you go against Tennessee the following week, that game's a race to 50.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that anybody punts. You might as well leave Townsend on the tarmac for that game. So it's although the way they're going, you might leave the defense with them. At some point, the Chiefs will get better. The question is how much better. Mm. And I'll leave it at this. Look, if they can figure this out to even 10 to 20% better defensively, they are so talented offensively, I don't even care if they're a wild card team. They could absolutely win the Super Bowl because they're so loaded. But with a defense playing like this, you have no chance. I don't care who's on the other side of the ball.
So real quick on the offense, obviously turnovers are, you know, probably number 1, 2, and 3 in terms of the biggest issues. But also, That game on Sunday night was, I mean, maybe the first time I've ever, like, been in pain watching Patrick Mahomes play football. Because even, like, the Super Bowl was obviously, like, a wreck, but it wasn't really, it wasn't because Mahomes was playing poorly. Dude was throwing footballs while horizontal to the ground, and it was hitting dudes in the face, you know? Like, that was his game, but the offensive line was obviously a huge mess. Against Buffalo, he was skipping some passes, and he talked about coverage and getting on the same page with the receivers. I'm not saying all this falls on Mahomes, but he also was throwing short of the sticks. Like, there were checkdowns, and some of those he was missing. It was at the very least, if not the worst, the weirdest Patrick Mahomes game I've ever seen. What do you think the second biggest issue is outside of the turnovers? Let's say the turnovers get to league average even. What else concerns you, if anything, right, about the offense?
So not a ton, but Mahomes, that was the worst game he's ever played.
Yeah, I think
that,
so.
That game was brutal.
Yeah.
So I think really the concern kind of falls on Bieniemy and Reed in the sense that I'm not worried about Mahomes. He'll probably throw for 450 yards this weekend.
But you're probably right.
It's more about they have to make a decision. Every team is playing them the same way. It's cover two. It's back the F up and make Kansas City go 12 plays. Well, you know what? You've got two options out of that. You either run the ball down their throat, mm-hmm, and you force these teams to get out of that defense, or you say, you know what? We're the Chiefs. We have Mahomes. We have all these weapons. We're going to run cover two beaters all day.
Yep.
And if you can stop us, you go right ahead and do it. Because, you know, last year that's harder. You don't have a good offensive line. This offensive line's fantastic. Let them sit back there and just chuck it. If you don't want to run defense out of it, which, by the way, I think you have to some extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be able – if you're getting a six-man box with this line, you should be picking up 5 yards a clip,
yeah,
easily.
Yes.
And listen, I'm not trying to pile on Clyde Edwards. Larry's hurt. I hope he gets better as soon as possible. I actually think Darrell Williams is a better player. So wow. I think – because he's faster.
Yeah.
He gets up the field. Sometimes Edwards delivers. He holds it. You know, like, oh, I should get 10 yards. He gets three. So – look, I think you've got to run them out of it a little bit. But I also think, like, when you see these cover twos, you know, the Chiefs act like, well, then that's it. We just can't throw the ball deep. It's got to be 4 yards. Call four verts, which is built to be cover two, and just wail the football down the field. Like, go after these teams. And the Chiefs have this complex right now where it's like, well, we can't. I mean, look, you don't think anybody ever played cover two of the year Mahomes was an MVP? They just didn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they're thrown all over the place. They're the same group of guys. So I think the Chiefs have a little bit of an identity crisis. They'll solve offensively. Defensively is where you have to worry.
I don't know if it's just because it's been a long time since we've gotten to talk, or if I'm just, you know, in a good mood to be here, or if maybe you just are right about a whole bunch of things. Maybe we just agree on a whole bunch of things. But I feel like I agreed with everything you said for the last 32 minutes or so, except for whenever you accused me of not being a regular showerer, which is the only thing I take issue with. Matt, thank you very much for your wisdom, for being here tonight, for taking the time, and also for making fun of my broken pancreas.
No problem. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. It was a journey, but I made it. Talk to you soon. Sooner than last time, Matt.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
You can follow Matt on Twitter @MattVerderam. You can read all of his work at fansided.com. You have the Stacking the Box podcast, the Stacking the Box column, the Stacking the Box YouTube channel that he's doing with Mark Carmen and Benny Heisler, and you can apparently Joe Montana, guest number one. I went to his Twitter. It was his pinned tweet right before the segment started, and I looked at the date, and it's September 28th. Let's see. What was I doing on September 28th? I was at home.
Think he has Joe Montana's number?
Definitely got his email or his Zoom address or something, probably.
Do you have Joe Montana's number?
You have Joe Montana's number.
I do.
I see.
I texted him that one time. Remember I said, what's up, cool Joe? Because that's his nickname.
It's not his nickname. His nickname was Joe Cool.
Cool Joe.
No, it's the order.
He was in Hawaii when I called him. That's just where Cool Joe's going to be at, man. You're not going to call Joe Montana. He's like, hey, I'm in Wyoming.
I mean, he could... He could have been in Montana. He could have been in Joe's Montana. I feel like if he legally tried to get ownership of the state of Montana, it'd be really hard to stop him. What's his middle name?
I don't know.
Rings, you think? Super Bowls?
Funny story I heard about this because I forgot that
there's a... take a break. Go ahead.
I forgot there's a town
Clifford
in Montana.
His middle name is Clifford. Can you imagine if he was Clifford Montana?
Cool Cliff. Living in Joe's Montana. Anyways, the town, that town that is essentially is the home of Joe Montana, you know, they're because of the name or whatever, Joe Montana. They were given money from during COVID, and they actually returned the money because they still have so much money from when they sold T-shirts saying, like, Joe, you know, Joe Montana.
I don't any of the context of what you just alluded
Drake
to.
Drake told me this. This is a story from the Drake.
But it seems like they did a Joe Cool thing.
It's like a really small town that changed their name to Joe Montana for Joe Montana, sold a bunch of shirts.
Did you make him Hispanic there for a second? Joe Montana.
Joe Montana. And apparently still have a ton of money from selling the shirts.
Sorry, they changed the name of a town to Joe Montana.
This is according to...
Is it called Joe and it's in Montana?
Yes, this is according to the Drake. There was a town in Montana of like 12 people, super small. They changed their name to Joe Montana, sold shirts.
All right.
And now apparently are still living off the wealth of the shirts.
Okay, after this we can take our break. In 1993, the town of Ismay changed its name to Joe.
So you didn't know this?
No.
You were just making the joke because of just obviously his last name is a state.
100%. I'm reading this verbatim, so I don't know if we can take credit for this or if someone else takes credit for this. Here's the next sentence. A Kansas City radio station convinced the population, all 22 of them, do it as a publicity gimmick when the legendary Joe Montana was traded to the Chiefs.
I don't remember the station. The Drake would know, but it was a music station, you know. One that I didn't recognize, so not like 95.7, but like, you know, it was a FM music, you know, station.
Okay. How can we run this one back?
Okay. What player right now has the name of a state?
There's almost certainly a town named Townsend.
Ooh.
We can get them to change it to Tommy Townsend.
Oh, boy.
We got to take a break. That's as good as it's going to get in any time in the next 6 or 7 minutes.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Justin Guile has a comment on the Facebook page and says, Josh, Beards, I love you guys. I never get to watch live because I'm at work, but I listen to the podcast. Please keep up the good work almost entirely. Thank you, Justin.
With Joshua Briscoe.
It's so nice to hear that someone loves me still. Justin doesn't care that I didn't successfully get him into the Panic at the Disco show tonight. Justin loves me anyway. Thank you, Justin.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We will get to Kit Swanson of KCSN here in about 15 minutes. What was that face you just made, Rudy?
I just remembered something that we hadn't talked about before the show.
I want to do some John Gruden stuff. It won't take too long.
We can definitely do the John Gruden.
What's on your mind?
I just remembered there are some sad fans.
Oh, bleep! There are sad fans who were on Reddit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beards.
Who can say what team they root for?
From the beyond... do we have to make fewer jokes about people on this show dying now?
I don't think so.
Great.
I think you're actually allowed to make more.
That makes sense. Beards RIP, his ghost did drop. How long is that? Let's do that after Kent.
That works. I'm trying to find it.
Okay. Yeah, let's try to do that after Kent. And if we need to do anything this hour, this is our last segment this hour, right? We're going a little twosies here, Rudy. We got a little twosies segment hour.
We can.
Let's do it.
Okay.
So you can fiddle around through that, and I want to talk about Gruden for a second here, because some of it is funny, because isgrudengoneyet.com has now been updated to yes. The counter is gone, and we don't know what his buyout was, and I'm sure there was some amount of buyout probably, so the Raiders could just get away from it as quickly as possible. And there's stuff that we could laugh about around it, right? But also...
We would never do that.
No, we would, and we probably will at some point. Because I think that making fun of people who show their true colors and end up being some form of despicable, I think making fun of those people is a good way to go about it sometimes. Because you don't have to always make every single thing the most serious, like, breakdown in the world. And... making them the butt of the joke kind of takes the power away sometimes from them, I think. Maybe I'm overthinking it, and I just want an excuse to laugh at John Gruden. But a few elements of this are, like, obviously serious, and there's a lot that I think you can glean from it. And I want to take, like, a couple minutes to do that. And the first thing that I ended up thinking... So the DeMaurice Smith stuff happens first, right? And as Verderam mentioned, he was coaching on Sunday. After the email comes out where he says DeMaurice Smith has lips the size of Michelin tires, which is like Jim Crow racist. Like, that's old racist. It's hard to be that kind of very specific, really just, I don't know, man. It was jarring to read, because you just have to... The emails were 10 years old, not 80. And it wouldn't have been cool 80 years ago, but it just seems like something that you hear about a long time ago. Not something that could be emailed, because society has moved past that. But that's the sort of the lie of the NFL having end racism painted in the back of the end zones.
That's something you find in a letter that your grandpa wrote, you know, that's been just in some, it's been in an attic for 40 years, right?
That's something in a Mark Twain book that you get to and you're like, oh no. Oh, Mark, no, we don't do that here
anymore.
I think
it might actually be in, like, Huckleberry Finn.
Probably is. Probably. Something along those lines. Yeah.
I mean, incredible job by him to be able to predict Michelin being a tire brand.
Yeah, good point. I guess
props?
That does. Yeah, that throws a wrench in it.
But, like, you know, I'm pretty sure it's in a book.
So that happens first. And then the other story comes out, and there's a bunch of just, again, like, I'm going to say comically, and I don't mean ha-ha, I mean, like, unbelievable, like, comically homophobic stuff. Stuff about female referees, because we can't have women refereeing football, I guess, for some reason. Like, John Gruden in his core, I guess, believes that your genitals do determine if you're a good or bad referee.
Can't focus on the game if he's looking at a referee.
And there's no way John Gruden has control over his own eyes, clearly. Or mouth, apparently. Or fingers, I suppose.
It's not his body.
So, and listen, there are lots of, I was trying to figure out how graphic I wanted to be in describing male referees that are still not very good at it, and I'm just going to go ahead and leave that one alone, actually. But you get all of the homophobia and the misogyny and the racism, and then also, like, railing against Roger Goodell for, like, caring about concussions, which also, by the way, the NFL is not, like, the most progressive thing in the world in terms of concussion and player safety stuff. So, to be more angry about concussion prevention than the NFL already was, also, like, it is impossible to be on the other side of this. But the first thing that I ended up thinking after reading all of that, after the initial, like, shock of my eyebrows being singed off, was thinking about how could you lead a group of people, including a bunch of black players, the league's only out gay player, coaching on a sideline that will have women who are referees, all of that. How can you, not to even mention the Washington cheerleader stuff, railing against player safety, how can you lead a group of football players in that? How, you wouldn't want that guy with those emails to be in charge of a McDonald's that you work at. Because he has an active disdain for everybody who's not him or Bruce Allen. That's a terrible person to have be in charge of anything. Bomani Jones went this way with it. He was on the Levitard podcast. And he said, look, I'm not even here to, like, gauge between levels of outrage for various forms of, you know, offensive things. My question before firing someone would be, does your scandal affect your ability to do your job? And how could John Gruden coach the Las Vegas Raiders with that being known about him in that locker room? How can you have respect and trust in that coach? And not only do you need to be held to that standard as a leader, you're held to a higher standard than everyone else because you're the leader in the face of your organization. This is an easy one, everybody. You don't need to overthink it. Is GrudenGoneYet.com? Yes.